Well, good morning and a happy new year, church. We doing okay? Will you turn the lights off? I'm just kidding. Hey, I hope you're doing okay. You all sound like you're doing better than I am, but I got my James Earl Jones voice, and we're going to work with that this morning. Someone said I need to try to keep it. I'm not really sure how to do that, but anyways, hey, so we're excited you're here this morning. If you don't know who I am, I'm Luke Ashley. I'm the student pastor at Genesis Metro, along with my beautiful wife, Christine, who will be up here to do announcements later on today, and you'll get to meet her. But we're excited to be with you this morning. I want to just extend a big hello. We love you and we miss you from Pastor Tim and Carrie, as they got the opportunity to go just have a couple days alone this weekend to kind of reflect and refresh and rest before the new year begins and before we kind of kick off 2016. And so you get me today. Happy New Year and a late Merry Christmas for this gift. Hey, here's something. That's a little better. Y'all are quiet. I'm going to kick all you out in a minute. Not kidding. Hey, these are our students. Y'all give them a round of applause. They're being so nice and quiet. I love it. Just kidding. I like when y'all are noisy, actually. It's familiar. So, hey, but the holidays are over, and for us in our house, we are obsessively... All right, we're kind of like Christmas freaks, I'm not going to lie, okay? We like start the whole thing in July, right? Like once I start sweating a little too much, just put on some Christmas music and I can just kind of start cooling down a little bit. And so we love the idea of Christmas. We love celebrating Christmas. So for us, January 1st is kind of like a mix of like happy and sad because we're excited about the new year, but at the same time, it's like a small funeral every time we have to take an ornament off the tree, right? And as we start putting things away, our heart breaks a little bit. And but we are excited about the new year. And for us... For most people, the New Year's great. It provides a chance to change, right? Everybody's all about always New Year's resolutions or goals. And if you're not about them, it's because you don't ever succeed in them. And so you just make them in your head and don't tell anyone about them. That's the reality, right? We all start the new year with this idea of what we want to change or areas of life that we want to improve in. And those are usually our health, our family, our finances. So some of us, we try to start something new, like I want to start reading more, or I'm going to pick up a new hobby, or whatever it may be. But for a lot of us, the new year also starts and brings forth a desire to increase our relationship with God. And we kind of look at the past year and decide, you know what, I'm going to serve more this year. I'm going to give more this year. I'm going to love better this year. I'm going to take more opportunity and find more moments to minister to people this year. I'm going to read through the Bible this year. We start these different things to try to help kind of improve or move our life forward. And it's funny to me because I've realized, and maybe it's taken me a while to realize, and you're smarter than I am, but there's nothing magical about January 1st. You ever notice this? Like, all reality is just another day. This is what I mean. On January 1st, I did not wake up that Friday at 5 a.m. with a desire to go to the gym. I don't know, I woke up at 6:30, turned my alarm off, pressing snooze, and went back to bed till about 7:30. That's just what I did. When I woke up Friday morning, I didn't lose this desire to eat Taco Bell and Sour Patch Kids. No, they still taste just as good. And sadly, my kids didn't wake up saying, hey, Mom, Dad, let's just sell the TV and the iPads and just have more family time. That wasn't their idea. Now, if you as a parent had your kid walk up to you on Friday morning on the first of the year and say, hey, will you sell my Xbox so we can have more family time together? You let me know, and we're going to package that in a book and sell it, all right? We're going to figure out how to make that work. But it doesn't happen because there's nothing magical about that day. You don't wake up on January 1st, and you just magically are a completely different person. All your issues are fixed. No. The garbage is still outside from Christmas, right? There's still too much food left over in your fridge. All the crud is still there. There's nothing magical about that moment. But oftentimes when we decide we want to start something new or change something in our life, we make the mistake of trying to wait for that perfect moment. We watch too many movies and it's romanticized and we get this idea that one day I'm going to wake up and like a new person, I'm going to want to go to the gym every day. Or all of a sudden, I'm going to wake up, I'm going to be 30 pounds lighter, and I don't know where it went. One day, I'm going to wake up, and my kids are going to remember to listen to me today. And my sixth grade boy is going to brush his teeth this morning on his own. It's just those things, right? No, they don't magically happen on their own. There's no perfect moment. But there are a lot of moments. See, I've come to the realization that it's not about waiting for the right moment. It's about making a moment right. It's about choosing, today's the day I'm going to take a step forward. It's about deciding, today's the day I'm gonna move forward in my life. You see, we always get caught up talking about improving our life and things like this. It's not so much about improvement as it is movement. It's about moving towards who God is calling us to be. And so as we talk about these things in our life, as we talk about playing a bigger part in the kingdom, as we talk about walking and pushing forward in our faith, it all starts with a decision. Every moment in history, every big moment started with a decision. You read through the stories in the scripture, they all started with a decision. For Abraham, he had to decide that he was going to pack up his stuff and follow God's voice to nowhere. For Noah, he had to decide that he was going to trust God and realize that he's not Dr. Doolittle, but somehow all these animals are going to come to this big boat he's building, and he's going to be able to save the human race on his boat. Moses had to decide that I'm going to go back to the land from which I'm a fugitive because I killed someone, and I'm also going to go and ask that they free all their employees. I'm going to ask that they free a nation. It started with a decision. It started with him deciding that the day's the moment. For David, he had to decide that step by step, I'm going to walk down into the valley of Elah and I'm going to face Goliath. Every big moment starts with a decision to take a step forward, to take a step in the right direction. I love these stories because these are reminders of what God's created us for. These incredible moments in life. Consider a couple of verses. Ephesians 2:10 says, "For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works." I love this verse because that word workmanship, it's like a masterpiece. So it's as if saying, like, we are God's masterpiece. We are something that he desires, something that he deeply loves. And we were created in him for good things, for good works. We weren't created to fail. Hell was not created for us. It's a destination that's there because of the byproduct of sin. But that wasn't created for us. It says that we're God's workmanship. Here's the beauty of what that means. I'm kind of a nature nerd. I love the idea of just outdoors and the ocean and the stars and the sky, and I kind of geek out sometimes with my wife, and she kind of looks at me like, what did I do? But we go down this path, but the cool thing about this is as much as I love nature and as beautiful as all that is, you know how God created all of it? He spoke it. It says that he spoke the world into existence. He spoke the moon and stars into existence. He spoke the plants and animals into existence. But then he came to man. And man was different. It says that with man, he took the dust from the earth and he shaped Adam, and he said that with his own holy breath, he breathed life into him. His workmanship, his masterpiece. We are different. We are special. Not in that your mama said, you special way, but I mean, we are special, church. And God has created and put in place paths for us to walk down. I love, he says this, we are his workmanship created for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. And I love this, Ephesians 3:20 says, "Now all glory to God, who is able through his mighty power at work within us to accomplish infinitely more than we might ask or think." These verses, these stories, I love because they remind us not only of who we are in God, but of the possibilities that exist if we would follow him. His desire for us, his design for us. But it all starts with the decision to take a step. It all starts with the decision to say yes to what God has in store for us. And as we look to 2016 today, we're not looking at your weight loss. We're not looking at your reading habits. We're looking at your spiritual health. We're looking at your call to play a part of the greatest story ever told. We're looking at the paths that God's already prepared for you to walk through. And I know it's a daunting task at times, seemingly impossible. But this morning, we're going to look at a story of probably a familiar one for most of you. And within it, I think there's three things that we're going to look at that can help us not only take that first step, but that can help us stay afloat and finish the race. In Matthew 14, just to kind of catch you up on where we are, Jesus and the disciples have been traveling, have been teaching, preaching, been healing people. And so I need you to get in the mindset of the disciples, right? You're an average Joe, and here this guy Jesus comes, calls you to leave everything and follow him, and so you go. So you got a little bit of crazy in you, all right? And so you go follow Jesus, and as you're following him, you're able to witness all these wonders. You see dead people that are risen. You see the blind that are given sight. You see the lame are healed. You see incredible things. And just before where we find our story, Jesus and the disciples are there and they're teaching and preaching the word and taking that opportunity. And as the day grows on, the disciples look to Jesus and say, hey man, it's kind of getting late. We need to let the people go home so they can eat. Jesus says, no, it's okay, you feed them. They're kind of looking around at each other like, we don't know, how are we going to feed them? And the cool thing is that Jesus and the disciples, they find just like basically a little sack lunch. It's a boy's lunch, a few fish, a few pieces of bread. It says that Jesus raises it to the heavens and blesses it before God, and then begins to pass it out. The scripture tells us that to 5,000 men, so you've got to consider and assume their wives and their kids there with them. So let's just call it an even 20,000. And it says from that little basket, they just continue to pass. And it says that after everyone had had their fill, and I don't know about you, but that's a lot for me, all right? And after everyone had had their fill, there were 12 baskets left over. Which is a whole other side note, because when God provides, he doesn't just provide enough, he provides in abundance, just because he can. And I think that reminder was gonna help the disciples here in a moment. Because once the people had had their fill, they loaded up the baskets of leftovers onto the boat. And Jesus said, I want y'all to go ahead and sail to the other side and I'll meet you there. Which I love again. There's just so much little cool things in here. I love the Bible. They don't question how. No one raised their hand like, how are you getting there? Swim, what are you doing? No one thought to ask that. They just trusted. He says, go, we're gonna go and he'll meet us there somehow. And it says, as they were on their journey, it got towards the middle of the night, and it said that the storm came upon them. It says that the wind was against them. So I don't know if you've ever been on a boat in the middle of a storm, whether it's the lake or the ocean, but it gets a little dicey real quick. And imagine them. They don't have running lights on the bow of their boat. They maybe have a couple candles and a little bit of light from the moon, but it's probably not a whole lot of light because it's a storm, and so it's probably covering most of the light. So they're in a lot of darkness. Fighting against the wind. And I love this. It says, and then Jesus came to them upon the water. So you got to picture this. Get back to your child mindset and imagination, because here's the reality of this. This isn't just like a children's story. This happened, all right? That's the cool thing about it. But get back to your child mindset. The disciples look out and they see this figure walking on top of the water. They see what looks like a man walking up and down the waves. And I love this. It says that they became afraid and they simply cried, it's a ghost. And I gotta give them, that's probably the most rational thought possible at the moment. I mean, think about it. Who in their right mind is in the 3-4 miles offshore, you're in the middle of a storm, you can't see, and you see what looks like a dude walking on the water. No one immediately thinks, hey, Jesus is finally here. A silly guy, man. He's always messing with us. Remember when he did the water and wine thing? He just chalked that up. Kudos, Jesus. No. No one thinks that. I get that they thought it was a ghost. It sounds rational, and I don't even believe in him. But what else would it be? And Jesus, knowing their fear, says one of the most quoted quotes in Scripture, don't be afraid. He says, take heart, don't be afraid, it's I. And then this is where the story gets good. I'm telling you, this is where it gets good. Verse 28 of Matthew 14. And Peter answered, Lord, if it is you, command me come to you. He said, come. So Peter got out of the boat and walked on water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took a hold of him, saying, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshiped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. I love this with Peter because here he is sitting on the boat. You got to imagine that they've been witnessing the impossible become possible for however many months. They've seen the disabled become able. They've seen miracle after miracle after miracle. They just got done loading up 12 baskets of leftover food that came from a little boy's sack lunch, okay? They get the idea of the impossible. And here Peter sees Jesus walking on water, and his first thought is, Lord, let me come. And I love this. He says, Lord, if it's you, but here's the thing, this could actually be translated, since it's you. Okay? This wasn't a statement of question or concern. This was a confession of confidence. He said, God, since it's you, let me join you. In the middle of witnessing the impossible become possible, in the middle of witnessing what he knew is ridiculous to think about, he says, Lord, let me come with you. Let me join you in this. Here's how he did it. Simple. His faith was in the Father. As we talk about taking a step forward this year, as we talk about pursuing the path of God, our faith must be in him alone. His decision was based solely on the provision of God. He understood the laws of the sea. What was his profession? He's a fisherman. If anyone knew and understood, not that it takes a genius to get this, all of our kids understand it, that if I'm on the boat and that's water, if I jump off, I'm going to sink. I may make a big splash or small splash, but I'm going down. He understood this. We all understand this. Yet because of what he was witnessing, he said, Lord, let me come. He was witnessing God's provision. And although what he saw went far beyond what he could envision, he still said, Lord, let me come. I don't know how it works. I don't care how it works, but I see it's possible, so let me come. It says he stepped off the boat and walked to Jesus. He knew what he was asking was possible. It's much like our kids. Again, we have a 5 and a 2-year-old. Reagan's almost 3, actually. And right now, Bella, our 5-year-old, she loves to color. And she's like the world's best encourager. Like, you will never feel bad about yourself around this little girl. It's the craziest thing. And so I'll sit down to color with her. And I'm an outliner. Anybody else an outliner? You outline the object first, then you color it in, right? And so I'll be doing that. She's like, Daddy, you're so good. That's a good job. She pat me on the back. Like, thanks, baby. A 33-year-old can color in the lines. Bravo, right? It's 2 college degrees. We'll get you. And but there's other things where she knows where her limitation is. If she needs something on the top shelf, she knows she has to ask for us to get it. And she knows she can ask for us to get it because we've gotten it before. We've proven that we can provide. See, we also have a firm no battery replacement policy. And what I mean is that if someone gives her a toy that makes a noise, when that battery dies, the toy dies. Anybody else with me? We don't replace them, okay? As far as she's concerned, we stopped making batteries, all right? But we made the mistake one time of replacing the battery. And every time after that, she would bring it up. Daddy, you can fix it. Daddy, I know you can fix it. She pat me on the back. I'm like, dang it, one time. But she'll bring it to me because she knows that I can provide that. Peter understood that no matter how impossible it seemed, the provision of Jesus far exceeded his vision of reality of what was possible. Because he's sitting there watching Jesus defy all logic and walk on water. And I love it. So what does he do? Lord, let me join you. I love this because he knows, he gets Ephesians 3:20. Now to him all the glory who is able through his mighty work at power at work within us to accomplish infinitely more than we could ever ask or think. We know the provision of God. We've seen it in our lives. We've seen it at GM. We've seen women battling cancer who don't have a prayer now walking among us healthy and clear. We've seen kids go from disabled to abled. We've seen marriages go from train wrecks to where they're mentoring other couples. We've seen God's provision in our lives. Yet how come so many times we play it safe in the areas we know to be true? If we know God's provision to be true, why don't we ask him to provide more often? Why don't we invite him into more areas of our life saying, God, I got nothing, help me out. Why do we continue to play it safe with what we know to be true? And I know I always get to work with students, but it's just a small thing. Like, God doesn't care about that. It's not a big deal. I think I can handle it. Just stop. We're able to call him Father because he first called us sons and daughters. And what father doesn't want to help their child? It doesn't matter how small the issue may be to you. His provision is what you need. But you got to ask him in. Putting your faith in him, knowing that he alone can do it. Peter knew he couldn't handle this, but his faith was in God. The second thing is this. If we're going to walk this path, if we're going to take these steps, we must keep our faith focused. I love this. Peter gets out of the boat, and amazingly, he makes it to Jesus. Like, you see the little kids' paintings where, like, the boat's here, and then Jesus and Peter are, like, right next to it, almost like he could be, like, holding on to the boat, right? Which, first of all, 1, 2 steps or 20, it doesn't matter. He still did more than you did, okay? He walked on water, all right? Get with it. We give him a hard time, but dude literally walked on the water, all right? It's incredible. But something happened. Something happened, and it's as if he realized all of a sudden that he's not supposed to be doing what he's doing, right? It's like the old Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons, all right, especially my adults. Everybody knows these, right? And Wile E. Coyote would always be chasing the Roadrunner, and in almost every episode, he would chase him off a cliff, right? And there's that moment of suspense where Wile E. Coyote is standing suspended in midair. And before he falls, what does he do? He always looks down. He looks down and he realizes the circumstance that surrounds him. He realizes he's doing something he shouldn't be able to do, and he falls. I love this. It says that Peter saw the wind, and he was afraid. The focus of his faith was overcome by the chaos of his circumstance. But here's the crazy thing. Here's what I never really thought about before. The storm never stopped. They got in the boat. They started going. The storm came. Then Jesus came. Then he walked. Then he fell. Then they got in the boat. And then the storm stopped. So that means that he willingly chose to step into the chaos. Like, our kids went through this phase where if the bass wasn't like the perfect temperature, they wouldn't get in. Right, so we'd run it and we'd check it, and then we'd go to put them in, and they'd touch it with their toe and just like go dead leg, right? It was like holding there, you're holding them up, like trying to force them into the tub, and you feel like a bad parent at the moment. It was like they wouldn't get in unless it was perfect. But that goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. There's no perfect moment. If you're waiting for the chaos to stop before you follow, you're never gonna follow. If you're waiting for your finances to be perfect before you start giving to God what's duly his, they're not gonna get there. If you wait for your schedule to die down enough to start serving the kingdom, you're never gonna serve. If you wait for your kids to be perfect to start loving them, you will never love them. If you're waiting for your spouse to be perfect in your eyes by your standards, then you'll never love them. Two imperfect people putting a house together for the rest of their lives. It's gonna be a struggle at times. If December has proven anything to us Texans, it's two things. One, we do get all four seasons. We just get them in the same week. Two, we cannot control, properly predict, or determine the storms. That doesn't stop the need to go out in them. Just because you're surrounded by chaos doesn't mean you shouldn't go out in it. Peter chose to go out in the storm. The storm was raging when he left. It didn't calm down and then startle him when it started back up again. That's not what happened. He lost focus. He took his eyes off of the peace in front of him. And became a victim of circumstances. Allowing fear to overcome his faith. If you're waiting for the slow season of life, keep waiting. One day you'll die and it'll be here. But until then, the chaos remains. And so does the call from God. Our call is to follow him in the midst of the chaos. Because here's the thing, peace doesn't come without God. You're waiting for peace to come in your marriage and in your home before you say yes to him. It's not gonna come. He brings peace. Jesus will bring peace. It doesn't come before him. It comes with him. It comes through him. It's provided from him. You have to trust in him. And then while you're trusting in him, step by step, you have to stay focused on him. What are we doing to remain focused on the Father? Faith doesn't always keep us from falling. Jesus said, oh, you of little faith, not you of no faith. Peter had faith. He lacked focus. He lacked the ability to just keep straight ahead with his eyes on Jesus, remembering the promised provision to those who will faithfully follow. But we shouldn't fear the fall. Because there's the beauty that when we walk with Jesus, if we fall, all we have to do is help, is ask. And his hand is there to pick us up. This is what we see Peter do. Peter loses sight. He loses focus. He begins to sink. He cries out to the Lord for help. It says that Jesus extends his hand and pulls him out of the water and carries him back to safety. But what are we doing to keep our focus? The trick is to maintain the clarity in the midst of the chaos. Are we pursuing time with God? Keeping our eyes on him. The psalmist wrote, your word is a lamp unto my feet, a light unto my path. Step by step, God's word, God's direction, God's peace will direct us in where we're going, helping us get to our desired destination. But are we spending time to focus on him? Are we choosing to focus on his word? Are we choosing to stay focused in community? That's the thing, people. Community, it's your choice. We always encounter these people, and I used to be one of them. It's like, I came in community because no one comes to me. No one came into my house. You have to choose community. Just like you have to choose any other health. You have to choose it. You got to take a step towards it. Or are you choosing to focus on your community to make sure that you're surrounded by people that can help you? The island of isolation is a dangerous place. On that island, there's no protection, no strength, no shelter. You die alone. But when you have people with you, you can be protected. You can link arms with those who have walked through the storm before. Who can help you understand how to stay focused, how to build shelter? How are you keeping your focus? The last is this, and it's simple. If we're going to take these steps to follow God, first, our faith has to be in him and him alone, because we can't do it. Secondly, we have to keep our faith focused, especially in the midst of chaos, in the midst of the storm. But the last is this. You have to be willing to take the first step. You have to be willing to take the first step. The path is always there. The provision is always there. The opportunity for Peter to do the impossible was there, but he still had to choose to step off the boat. He still had to decide to take the first step. And I love this thought. Because it's a continued reminder that it's not about us. However, we do play a part. It's not fully on you to save your marriage. If you mess it up, you probably can't fix it on your own. It's not up to you to save your kids on your own. But don't misunderstand me, church. You still have a part to play. You have to be willing to take the right steps in the right direction to save your marriage. There's still work to do. You have to be willing to take those steps towards this idea of just a ridiculous grace. An unconditional love, accepting their flaws the same way they accept yours. When it comes to saving and leading your kids, you can't just throw your hands up and throw them to the world. It's still your job to take the right steps to help lead them and guide them. But the provision is there. But you got to choose to take a step. You got to choose to step off the boat, out of comfort, and contribute to the story of God. We always give Peter a hard time. He was said to have little faith, but his faith was strong enough to bring action. So it always makes me wonder, what about the other 11? Where were they? What was different about Peter that he was the only one willing to go? That he was the one willing to step out and witness the impossible become possible. See, when Christ called Peter to do the impossible, he didn't hesitate. Again, he knew the sea. He knew what was supposed to happen to him when he stepped off the boat. But his focus wasn't on what he was called to do. It was on who was calling him. Because a lot of times what God calls us to do with our limited vision seems impossible. Say, God, I can't do that. I'm not equipped to do that. I don't have the ability to do that. It's not about what you're being called to do. It's about who's calling you. God doesn't always call the equipped, but he equips the called. It's not about your ability. It's about your availability. It's about you being willing to take a step forward and let God lead you. There was nothing in Peter other than his faith and willingness to try that made him walk on water. It was Jesus. There was nothing about David minus his faith that made him able to defeat Goliath. There was nothing about Moses minus his faith that made him able to part a sea in order for a nation to be led to freedom. There was nothing about Peter minus his faith that made him able to walk on water. How will God call you this year? What adventure will God call you on? What path is God calling you down? What boat, if you will, is God asking you to step out of in order to walk with him? I think for a lot of us, much like our New Year's resolutions, it's the same boat every year. He's still waiting for us to step out and to trust in him with our marriage, to trust in him with our kids, with our finances, with our work, with what we're going to do and how we're going to live our life. What impossible feat will Christ call you out of the boat for this year? To serve, to lead, to love, to share. It's a daunting task, but possible. I read a quote earlier this week. It said this. It said, start by doing what's necessary. And then do what's possible. And soon you'll be doing the impossible. So think about this. You start with what's necessary. It's faith. You cannot take that first step without faith. So you start with what's necessary. That's faith in the Father. And then you do what's possible. And what's possible today is maybe just one step. And then you see God provide there, and so you take another step. And then one more after another, step by step, heel to toe, heel to toe. The next thing you know, you look up and you are standing in the middle of the impossible. what was ridiculous has become your reality. What you thought was out of reach is where you live. It's what you're doing. One step at a time, church. Everyone just took one step at a time. Putting faith in the Father, working to keep their faith focused, being willing to take a step forward. We must have a faith that leads to action. Because it's never about believing you can, it's about believing God will. Van's gonna head out and we're just gonna close with a story. And you see, I get that this is a difficult thing. It's easy to talk about, it's easy to share, it's easy to encourage you to. But it's at times a difficult thing to do. Because the crazy thing is, Scripture's clear. It says we are God's workmanship. We are His prized possession. He treasures and desires us. He calls out to us. He wants to lead us. But there's this whole other side that people are afraid to talk about. And it's that side that wants us to believe we can't. And I can remember a moment in my life. The only trouble that ever found me was the trouble I created. I had godly grandparents, I had godly parents. I had the opportunity for community around me. But as I chose different paths, it finally led me to a place when I was 22, I proposed to Christine, who's now my wife, and we had wrestled and battled with what we were supposed to do with our life, mainly me. And after years of battling this call, I finally said yes to this crazy thought of preaching and teaching the gospel, specifically to teenagers. And we put that before God, saying, all right, God, whatever you're gonna do with this, we'll follow. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. I know who I am. I'm getting old and I'm getting more bald, and it's just what it is, all right? But if you think you can use us, just use us. And I can remember specifically a day in October of 2007, we'd just gotten off the plane and gotten home from a church in Odessa, Texas, who had offered us a position to come out and be their student pastor. We'd gone and met the church. It's a church of about 80 people, had a student ministry of about 6, so it didn't take long to meet and greet, right? And for us, we looked at this thinking, like, this is the perfect opportunity for us to learn, to grow, to fail. But as we sat there in the living room, sitting on our couches next to each other, my wife looking at me to lead, I couldn't say yes. I have this opportunity to do something incredible in front of me, and I just couldn't bring myself to say yes. I said, I don't know, I just need a minute. So I went into our guest bedroom to my closet, because we can't share the same closet. I'll let you guess why. And then, so I went into my closet, and I remember just getting on my knees, just frustrated and clueless, not knowing why I couldn't just say yes. Then I began to hear it. I began to hear the whispers. You can't do this. Did you forget who you are? Did you forget what you've done? What if they found out? What if they knew your past? You're not qualified to do that. Who would follow you? As I sat there in fear, frozen, unable to say yes, it's as if I felt a hand touch my shoulder. And I just felt this release. And for the first time, I understood it. I finally made sense. I was able to look and say, you're right. I can't. My past is filthy. I am unqualified. I don't have what I need to have to do this. But that's the beautiful part of God. It's He does. It is not about my ability. It's about being willing to be available to Him, for Him to use me. looked at said, I don't care if I'm not qualified. I don't care if I don't have the experience yet. I don't care if I don't have the talent yet. I'm trusting in God's provision. I'm trusting in the God who provided life, who provided hope, grace, and peace in my life. I'm trusting in Him. And I'm going to be willing to take a step. I don't understand how I'm going to take the second one, but I'm going to take it. Because I know His provision goes further than my vision. I know that He can see further than I can. Because I know I was created for good works in Him. And I know that through Him, and only through Him, and His power working in me, that I am set up to do far more than I could ever think or imagine. But church, it starts with taking a step. So whatever area of your life that fear is just freezing you to, whatever chaos is holding you captive, you need a little clarity this morning. Refocus on God. His provision, His ability, His talents, His power, and just take a step forward. Just be willing to take one step at a time. You'll fall and He'll pick you up and then you'll keep walking. Don't fear the fall. Let faith be that guide this year. Invite God into whatever area of your life is needed. No matter how impossible victory seems in that area, you invite Him in, and step by step, before you know it, you're standing in victory. Step by step, before you know it, you've seen what was ridiculous become reality. You've seen what was impossible become possible. Before you know it, church, I'm going to ask that we stand to bring in the new year. That we lift our hands and cry out to God that whatever it is, whatever area of your life, that you invite Him in this new year. That you start off January just by taking a step this morning. Maybe it's a step to save your marriage. Maybe it's a step to lead your kids. Maybe it's a step to follow Him. Maybe for the first time, it's one step to believe in Him. Say, God, I don't fully understand this, but I believe.